On side two of this tape, I believe I was talking about the old neighborhood at 10th and Hickory. There was the other gang, which is led by Charles Steele, I believe, there on 12th and Hickory. Had mostly girls in it, including my sister Helen, and I think Morrison Maddox, who was always someone that I was very fond of. But anyway, they were the PGs. No one was ever supposed to know what they were for. We had lots of fun in that neighborhood, playing out at night after dark and things. But this story is about my mother, not about me. Mother was, and my father were part of a very fast post-World War I crowd. This was characteristic of after the war. There was a great deal of license, I guess you'd call it. My mother and father's life together was very stormy, and it touched me in many ways and affected me later on rather profoundly. Their arguments, and my mother always told me her side of it, but my father did drink heavily, and he'd disappear for weeks, if not months at a time, and show up after having been on the West Coast and God knows where. He gambled heavily and drank heavily, and his father bought him Riverside Farm, which is out on the Summerhill Road. It's a housing development now, I think, but it was 6 miles out and over a dirt road. I can remember sometimes out there, well, there's a huge house on that farm. That was the original owners looking down over second bottom land, McKinney Bayou. There were parties out there. That was the main thing my father did. He had an overseer, Hugh Powell. I would stay out there with them from time to time. Hugh and I would play all day long, but I can remember at nightfall how desperately homesick I was for my mother, and sometimes over this uncertain crank telephone, the wire was often crossed or down or something. My mother would have to drive out that night and bring me in. Had a Shetland pony in those days, Sunshine. I think one of the Tennysons had it, sold it later, had it later. There were a lot of wild parties. I don't have much to report about that time. I do know that my father must have struck my mother more than once, but it could well have been provoked. Broke her nose one time, I remember, but she could have provoked him. But those are not necessarily good for history. The only thing that I can remember in this crowd, I wish I could remember some of the members of it. I know that Esther Weber Wilson was one of them, and what was her husband's name? One syllable. Was one, and Juliet Jennings was one. And anything I have to say should not be taken as slander of their name, because I don't have any good names to go by. I remember that two members of their group, one of them was Fleming Burke. My father, I remember him well because he was a handsome, attractive man, but he had been in the war. My father told me one time that Fleming had the experience of lying wounded for 24 hours with a dead man over him in one of the battlefields of France. His particular woman friend was Imogene Mitchell's very handsome, beautiful woman. What was her name? I wish I could remember. I have always, but I don't now. I can remember her, how much I admired her, how tender and nice she was with me whenever I was in adult company, and she was one of them. Mother told me one story. She's told me a lot of stories, but I've forgotten them. But it seems that two members of this crowd, and it shouldn't be taken to be either one of the ones that I've just mentioned, since they're the only names I can remember, were carrying on, were married, but they were carrying on with someone else, and this very macho society, where the men did a lot of hunting, and these husbands of these two were out hunting and wouldn't be in until late. So they were out, went out in the car into the College Hill Cemetery, where they were carrying on in whatever fashion. And about that time, the Cotton Belt Railroad, which expected no one to be in the cemetery at that time of night, parked a train in front of the gate. And so they were trapped there all night until that train moved. I don't know what the outcome of that adventure was. My father's and mother's stormy marriage continued with him presumably being a plantation owner, but it being really run by Hugh Powell, continued until 1924, I guess, when I was 10 years old. And at that time, my mother filed for divorce, and I can remember how wretched I was when my father was the one chosen to make the announcement to me and to tell me that I was coming with him and my sister was going with my mother. That was the beginning of what was very nearly a breakdown for me. And he, in impatience, told me that my mother didn't want me, which, of course, I didn't believe. I don't believe it now. But anyway, I somehow or another escaped and went to my grandmother, at whose house I spent any weekend that my mother and father were partying, much to my happiness. But anyway, she consoled me, and I wound up by going with my mother, and subsequently moving with her to St. Louis. And this ends the Texarkana, my phase of this report. I have to go back a little bit to say, though, that the happiest time in this rather unhappy childhood was when I had to stay with my grandmother, when she babysat us when my mother and father were off partying. But my sister hated it. One more recollection comes of a big barn dance they had out at the old Texarkana Country Club, which is a big, as I recall it, a green frame house. Something that my grandfather Temple, I think, was very influential in founding. But it seems to me that the orchestra, the band, was an early Dixieland band, and I believe it was called Gordon's. These are not joyous recollections, unhappily. And I'm sure that I have overlooked some of the things that my mother wanted to recall. Certainly they're not as well spoken as what she wrote, but perhaps there's some items here that at least are not lost, and I hope that they will somehow or another find their place, and I hope that my mother, wherever she is, takes some satisfaction in the fact that I have added this to the other scraps of hers that have not been lost, that I'm passing on to the museum. And I thank Wilbur Smith for being my go-between for all of this, and I look forward to being in Texarkana and seeing the museum, and I hope we'll be able to attend one of the Pioneer Family Festivals. Well, I've already signed off, but I have a lot of footnotes, having listened to the tape. So let me just take them as they come. I mentioned the iris bulbs. And I don't know whether they were iris or jonquils, but I've always seen them as iris and perhaps even white iris that my great-grandmother, Helen Marr, brought as a little girl in her saddlebags from Illinois, as I believe to be the place that they came from. In the spring and summer, my grandmother, Crouch, always went out on, always went to the cemetery in Rondo. But now, of course, she's married and has a family, would hire a carriage, a buggy or something, and go out there to tend the cemetery plots. My mother recalls going with her. And at that time, one spring, she remembers particularly, the whole countryside, as she described it, were covered with great-grandmother Helen Marr's flags, as they called them in those days. A particularly beautiful image for me, going back to this little girl on her pony, coming to a new place to live. Another account that my mother tells about Rondo was when a detachment of Confederate recruits camped there on their way to join whatever unit they were assigned to, and they drank from poison stream or well, and as I recall it, the entire contingent died and was buried there in the cemetery at Rondo. Whether it was the entire contingent, I don't know, but that's another story. I mentioned Joe Weingarten. That's much farther along. That's when my mother was a young bride with a baby girl with a boy on the way. Joe Weingarten was the son of somebody. I don't know what his father's name was, but he was a bright young boy. And their first store was somewhere there near to where mother and my father lived, an apartment there at Fannin and Bell. But that's where she did her marketing. She tells the story that she went over there in the manner of grocery stores, had written it the white wet chalk, whatever it is, on the window, and had misspelled the word fryers, chicken fryers. And my mother said, "Joe, you misspelled fryer." And his response was quick and smart. He said, "Well, it got you in here, didn't it?" Well, Joe Weingarten, I met him when he was an old man, maybe a year or two before he died, and he remembered my mother, and as I indicated earlier, remarked on what a beautiful woman she was. Another item that I'd like to mention about my childhood there, because I think it's historic in Texarkana history, is that I was one of the first students at Patty Hill School there at 9th and Hickory. Mrs. Pat Patterson had started this progressive school. Seems they still starting progressive schools of one sort or another around the world, but fresh air was a big thing then. I'd started off at Fairview as a first grader, and I can remember how sick I was there. I thought I was really ill, but of course I was just homesick and scared. And the teacher finally excused me, and it was soon after that that they put me in Patty Hill. But we had to sit outside and in this open pavilion with a roof over it in her backyard, Ms. Patterson's backyard, and had to bring blankets in the wintertime to keep ourselves warm. I remember that first teacher, I have no idea what her name was, but she was an emotional mess. And I remember one of the things that she did was eat raw eggs, just break an egg in a saucer and slip it down her throat. Those are memories that I have. Mrs. Patterson was, I remember, as a sort of a stern, I remember almost as a caricature. But anyway, she started Patty Hill. I also went from there to Central Grammar School after Patty Hill. But this, again, is not about me. This is, I would like to say one thing, though. Frank Mullins and I were both, would draw pictures, and our favorite subject apparently was schooners or boats, sailboats, where one time whoever the teacher was at that time, it may have been Miss Neal. I want to mention Miss Neal too. But so we were each, we were directed to each draw our boat, to draw his boat on the blackboard. Frank Mullins's boat had a round bow, and mine had the typical inverted curve of the schooner that would have a figurehead. But anyway, the students voted his best. I've never gotten over that terrible, terrible disappointment. And of course, I'm joking. But one of the teachers there, the last one that I had, I believe, was Miss Neal. I've never forget her name, and I'll never forget her face. But she was very fond of me, and she expected me to be president of the United States. I met her again when I was going to junior college in Texarkana in 1932 and 3, and she still expected me to be president of the United States, and I'm awfully sorry that I have disappointed her. I mentioned my grandfather throwing the money up to the bell cord, the cord that runs along in the, used to run along in the coaches of a train that a conductor could pull to stop the train for an emergency. Years later, when I was running a little cotton oil mill, Farmer's Cotton Oil in Texarkana, I had an old, inherited and jolly, nice old seed buyer who bought cotton seed in that territory for us. And he recalled my grandfather, and he recalled one time when a man's hat blew off when he was standing in the vestibule of the train. My grandfather pulled the cord, stopped the engine, and had him reverse and go back to where the man picked up his hat. It's hard to imagine anything like that happening. Now, I'd like to mention something that's my part of Texarkana history, at least it's something that I experienced that's part of Texarkana's history. There was a big lynching when some black man was caught with some stolen tires or with a stolen tire. Dick Schott was the deputy sheriff. He's a big friend of my father's. When he undertook to arrest him, the man shot him, as I recall, shot him through the jaw. I don't think Dick Schott died, but anyway, the mob, or the man was arrested, put in jail, and the mob gathered there. I remember it was night, the man who was the offender, I think, worked for Mr. Wadley there on I don't know what the street is, about 7th there in Pecan, maybe. And I used to pass him on the way to grammar school. By that time, I guess I was going to Central Grammar School. And he was, he was put together, sort of a light-complexioned man, who has always spoke to me in nice fashion. I may not have the right one, but I think that was the one. But my father was somewhere down there. Later on, he told me that he was there trying to save the sheriff, which meant that he was trying to get the sheriff out before the mob got the sheriff and the man. My mother was out looking for my father, and my sister and I were over on Miss Webster's porch there at 10th and Pecan. They were our neighbors across the alley. That was Dr. Webster's wife, Isabel Webster's home, who was a great friend of my sister Helen's. But I can remember the terror that I felt. With all that, we could hear the shooting, and I could imagine what was going on down there, with both my parents missing. But so I've known a lynching also. So I know the accounts of how they hung him from a telephone pole, and then, as I recall, they soaked him with gasoline and dragged him behind a car down state line, or maybe it was Broad Street. I think I call the TSNN Railroad the Texarkana Shreveport, the Texas Shreveport in Natchez. I believe it must have been Texarkana Shreveport in Natchez. And while I'm thinking about my grandfather serving there, when his home, the family home, was gone from Beach over to Hickory, I can remember when I was staying there, and later on when I was visiting there, we'd wait for him to walk north from the railroad yards to the house, and I'd always run and meet him, yelling, "What did you bring me?" And he always did bring me some little something that he had bought for me. I also remember that he brought delicacies home like tangerines and Brazil nuts. Of course, we didn't call them Brazil nuts, but special delicacies that he could get in Shreveport that weren't available in Texarkana. He had some wonderful things, I think, because when I was there, I believe he bought a merry-go-round, a little child's merry-go-round, and I particularly remember a wooden assembled track incline with a little cart on it that you could get up on the cart and it would run for maybe 20 feet. He was a great, gentle and loving grandfather and mother to my mother, and husband all his years to my big mama. I don't think I mentioned, perhaps I didn't need to, but Tom Edwards, my great-grandfather, Hallie Edwards Crouch's father, was a merchant farmer there in Rondo. And I think when I was a child, their log cabin was still there. My father used to say that he was going to dismantle it and maybe take it to his farm, but of course he never did. I mentioned John Edwards' children. I omitted to mention Florence, who was probably the oldest one, and I believe that Florence was the name of John Edwards' wife. I didn't make it clear that my grandfather and grandmother, when they married, that is Crouch, lived with Big Mama's mother, Helen Marr, in the house on State Line, and they bought the house on Beach before my mother was born, but after my aunt Helen Crouch Williams, and Uncle Paul were born in the State Line house. A childhood friend of my mother's neighbor there on Beach, I believe we were on East 9th, right at Beach there, was Mildred Fuquay, later Mildred Fuquay Little. My mother and she maintained their friendship all their lives until the first one. I don't know whether it was Mother or Mildred died first, but they died just about the same time. In my account of my grandfather in the dark, I said he walked across the trellis. Obviously, I know the word is trestle. Another item to be bleeped, maybe, is one that my mother always told me, going back to my grandfather on his run. Uncle Paul had the reputation when he was young of being quite a man with the women. And on one of his runs, there was this woman. I don't know whether she was notorious or not, but she was very worn out and sleeping. And my grandfather overheard some men across the aisle saying she must have spent the night with Paul Crouch. It was made my grandfather very proud. I mentioned the fact that the bordellos in the old days were on West Broad. That's not right. They were, I believe it was Front Street. I guess it still is, if that's the name. They were on West Front, down where the railroad ran. The street where I ran naked in Houston was Taft. There was a streetcar track that ran there and made that jog right where our house was. And that was a streetcar track that I ran down. Of course, Taft is still there. I have to mention some of the other people in my neighborhood who were more or less contemporaries or contemporaries of my sister's. As Bernard Highland, I remember some of the older boys would put us younger kids up to try to get us to fight. They'd tell each of us things that the other one had said, which weren't true. And I remember encountering Bernard Highland one time, and the other boys were egging us on. And I was not a fighter, still not a fighter, but I hit him and knocked him down, and it scared me a whole lot more than scared him, and I begged him for us to make peace, and I think we did. That was over close to where Mildred and Thelma Farr lived, the Farr home over on 12th Street. Charles Christian lived over in there someplace. I don't remember Charles as being one of our gang. As a matter of fact, he was kind of a tough fellow. I'm avoiding the word bully because I don't think that's fair. But that's the way I remember him. Joe Clark lived over on 12th later on. Leo Bryant's had another brother, Thad Bryant, who was older. And, of course, Isabel Webster lived across the alley, as I've mentioned. Francis and Flora Falk lived on Pecan there at 6th in the big house. It's a wonderful story that my grandfather told about Ms. Falk, but I will censor that one. It's not to her discredit. I shouldn't leave that impression, but it was her naivety. Ms. Bottoms' parrot, not too originally, cried, "Polly wants a cracker. Polly wants a cracker," all day long when it was out. My father's farm, which classifiable as a plantation, was 2,000 acres on Second Bottom land on McKinney Bayou. And the boy I played with and stayed with out there was Hugh Powell Jr., but he was always Junie Powell. My father had his own entertainers for his parties from his plantation hands, and I remember Cooney played the guitar, and Jesse would jig. I think there were other musical instruments also, but those two I particularly remember. And the truck driver out there was Johnny Glenn. My particular friend was called Lasses. And then there was a particularly nice, somewhat older boy who was AC. I think I ran into AC.